The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the Internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Let's go ahead and get started. I know we're running a bit late there. I do see a couple of seats in the front. There are some, if we need to, I hate to ask you, if we need to squeeze in a little bit, we have some people, you're certainly welcome to stand. There should be handouts around. Again, I know that was a mistake to give those to you ahead of time. But I did anyway. So we'll be referring occasionally to that. And so if you get, if I get particularly dull, you can just look at that. Maybe there's something interesting there. Well, let's pray together as we begin. Our Heavenly Father, we're very grateful to you for your kindness to us. We thank you for the opportunity to be here today, this week. Lord, we thank you that there is that you are doing so much amongst us, and we pray you would continue to bless us. Give us your grace, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, thanks for coming to the session on faculty development, creating a culture of faculty development. My name is Brian Lynch. I'm the headmaster at Veritas School in Newburg, Oregon. Veritas is a K-12 school of 220 students, and we're in our 18th year. I've been headmaster there for 13 years. Prior to that, I was a public school teacher. I taught AP European History and European Humanities, and my first couple of years, things like career development, whatever they didn't want to do, that's what I did. And so the following presentation has grown out of my experiences as a classroom teacher and as a school administrator. I was also a founding board chairman at Veritas, so I've had experience at different levels. So I'm hopeful that you'll find some of this helpful to you as you're developing your faculty development plans. And if you're interested in talking more about any of this, I'd be very, very interested in meeting with you, getting your ideas as well. This is what we do out in Oregon. It's relatively isolated out there in the Northwest. And so, there's probably plenty of things that you're doing that we should be doing. So please feel free to talk to me about that. I do see some of you guys standing in back. There are a few chairs up front if you prefer to come up front. All right, so I'll go ahead and begin. I apologize for the outline, the detailed outline. I should have taken an outlining course from Mr. Reynolds, Dr. Reynolds. That would have been a lot easier for everybody. I just have lots of space to write. But so we have a detailed outline that we'll be going through. Next time, I'm just doing the one-liner for an outline. In a recent ISM publication, there was an article on the cost of faculty culture that is not focused on growth. Some of you may have seen this. I want to quote a bit of it. They wrote, "Management teams that do not successfully build a quality faculty culture will eventually experience enrollment decline. An unhealthy faculty culture leads to turnover, typically of the best teachers." That's the part that scares me the most, right? Unhealthy faculty culture leads to turnover, typically of the best teachers. Human resource experts largely agree that employee turnover affects the bottom line in significant ways. Recruiting, lowered productivity, overworked remaining staff, increased training costs. Excellent teachers want to work with other excellent teachers, and they want to work in schools where other teachers want to get better and where the whole faculty wants to get better. And if we don't do that, then we risk losing them. They'll only stay around so long. So that's one of the whys, one of the big whys. Why do we care about developing faculty culture? Well, it's to keep our best teachers, because the best teachers are what makes our schools grow, makes our schools worth being at, right? So it's retention, student retention, but it's also quality teachers. And that allows us to fulfill our mission. Without those excellent teachers, we don't get to do what we want to do. So that's kind of the why. let me address just a couple of basic assumptions. I'm assuming a foundation of a commitment to classical Christian education. I won't talk a lot about Christ-centeredness as I go through this, but that's assumed. I'm understanding that all of us are committed to that. A second assumption is that teachers are chiefly what we have to offer. That's why our schools are our teachers. Who they are, what they do in and out of the classroom is really what we have. And some of you have marvelous facilities, I know. Curriculum, programs, all of those kinds of things are wonderful and good and necessary, of course. But nothing tops the value of your classroom teachers. So that needs to be a tremendous focus. Therefore, it seems to me that the main task of school administrators, school leaders, is the development of teachers. If teachers are who we have to offer, what we have to offer, then it should be one of our main goals or our main task to develop them and to grow them. And so I'm assuming that as we go. We, of course, keep the lights on, administrators, keep the lights on. We keep the bills paid, and those things are important. Otherwise, your school closes, right? But the focus on the mission and on teacher growth and getting faculty to buy into that they need to grow, the whole faculty to grow, that's, to me, that's the main key. Just really quickly, show of hands, how many school administrators do we have in the room? Most of school. Are there any teachers in the room? Just teachers here? Wonderful, thank you. I mean, I don't mean just teachers. I didn't mean that. I can say it because I'm a half-time head of school. I teach half-time. I teach humane letters to 11th graders and rhetoric to 11th graders. So I'm just a teacher, just like you. So welcome. High school administrators? And elementary administrators? Okay, good. So hopefully this will be applicable to all of you. Like many schools, our location has caused us to be sure we focus on teacher growth internally. Again, we're out there in the Northwest. We can't send everyone to ACCS or SEO or other wonderful training or bring people in all the time. So we've spent a lot of time developing internally and consistently our attention to faculty development. So it's something we think is very, very important, and we spend a lot of time working on it. And hopefully, again, you'll be able to take something away from this. So if that's true, the administrators, their job is to develop teachers. It's true. Teachers, too, their main responsibility is to grow as a teacher. Some people may think that teachers are mainly employed to teach subjects to children. And while that's a big part of their day, actually, I think we chiefly pay them to grow as people and as teachers. We pay them to learn and to grow. Yes, they have to be in the classroom and do things they do. And they think that's their full-time job, to teach third graders. Really, their full-time job is to grow as people and as teachers. So that I'm assuming that as we grow through this. And last assumption then is we develop our school-wide plan each year based on our mission, the board strategic plan, administrative goals, and teachers have individual plans as well. As you can see, and again, I hesitate to refer to the handout, but very quickly, you can glance at the handout, you can see our plan. We will come back to that, so put that away for the moment. If you lose focus, take a look at that, maybe that'll help. All right, so let's look at some principles that underpin how we think about faculty development. I don't know but those five ways to improve your school. I'm a sucker for those things on the internet. The 9 key essential. What is that? Okay, just kind of click on it. And, invariably 8 things or things. Okay, we're already doing that. But maybe there's that one thing. Once in a while, there's that one thing. So maybe we should retitle this. 9 key principles to effective faculty development. Are you doing these 9 easy steps? And if you're not, why not? Okay, maybe that's the new title. I'll redo this for next time. So principle number 1, how effective faculty development is mission-focused. And again, maybe this is assumed, we should assume this, but I think it needs to be up front. Everything we do in terms of developing our teachers, developing our faculty as a whole, must be deliberately supportive of the mission. It's got to be mission-focused. Whatever your particular mission statement is, I think we all have the similar kinds of things. Classical Christian education, ours is cultivating wisdom, virtue, and godliness. So everything we do, we look at that and say, does this really meet that? Our portrait of a graduate, our characteristics of teaching excellence, these are all considered as well. So everything that we do in our teacher training, our broader faculty growth plan, has to fit the mission. We can't do everything that's worthwhile, right? There are lots and lots of things out there that we could be doing, lots of programs and plans and things that might be good in some ways. What is it that best fits the mission? So everything must be evaluated in light of the mission. I keep repeating that, but I think that's just number one. We have to keep that in mind. Is this really supporting us? We need to communicate this frequently to the faculty why what we're doing is supportive of the mission. Leaders are reminders. I read somewhere the other day. I know that's not new, but the leaders are reminders. It struck me again. That's really our job, chiefly, is to remind people in our organization, parents, teachers, students, why we're doing what we're doing. So when we're doing faculty development, it's important, I think, to continually remind people this is how this fits the mission. And so they understand it, and they can make that part of their own thinking as well, and pass it on to parents and students also. So we keep the focus on the big picture, on the mission, both what to do and what to avoid. Again, there's plenty of things that we could do that we just don't have time for, that might be a distraction. And we think about balancing philosophical and practical, the old and the new. We want to avoid reverse chronological snobbery as well, I think, and not just focus on old things. We look at contemporary educational research as well, carefully, very carefully. We'll talk about that. We don't just because it's new, it's bad or good. It doesn't work like that. So we want a broad range of things. But again, the main thing is, does it fit the mission? Can this new piece of research that just came out, can it help us support the mission? Then we'll look at it. And if not, then we'll ignore it and do the things that we know work. For example, our Thursday morning readings, we're going through an edition of Quintilian, which is on speech and writing. Some of you may think, I think it's books 1, 2, and 10 or something. So it's a small edition of Quintilian. So we're reading through that together as a faculty and discussing it. Just reading it out loud. It's not no homework. Just 20 minutes in the morning, read and discuss. That's our morning, Thursday morning reading. Our monthly meetings have been, after school meetings, have been taken up with a book called The 7 Strategies of Assessment for Learning. Some of you, anybody heard of that? I'll be doing a session on that tomorrow if you want to know more. That's a contemporary book that we've been going through. We're also starting to relook at the 7 Laws of Teaching. It's been a few years since we've read through 7 Laws of Teaching, and so we're picking that up. We started this spring, and that will go on until next year. So we have an ancient source, we have a 19th century source, we have a 21st century source. But as long as they fit our mission, then we're okay with it. But we're really, really, I think, pretty careful about what we've got. So mission-focused faculty development. Secondly, effective faculty development should be student learning and student growth centered. Right, the whole point of this is it should have a clear impact on students academically, but also in their culture, school culture. Now, it doesn't have to mean that it's an immediate or obvious impact, but we really want to focus on the students. And again, maybe some of that's obvious, but sometimes we can go off on programs or curriculum or just focus on teachers. We really want to make sure we're thinking about students. The measure of success, I think, in faculty development is the students. What's the impact? Their understanding and their growth for us, their growth in wisdom, virtue, and godliness. What's the impact on students? We have to constantly think about that. An example for us, we use a version of ISN Student Experience Profile, the student survey. We use a version of that we developed, and we do this every year with our students. This year, we took a couple items off of that to include in our faculty development plan for next year. Through that survey, we were seeing that our score for predictability and supportiveness was a bit down here. Our score for the question was, teachers have worked every day helping me become a more wise, virtuous, and godly person, which is our mission. That score was way up here. We patted ourselves on the back. Well done. But our score for being supportive and predictable, which is really an indicator of teacher interaction with students every day, and a real indicator of retention as well. If students aren't feeling supported and they don't know what the teacher's going to be like today, eventually they trickle away. That score needs some shoring up. So we've been looking at ways that we can boost that. So the point is that students grow student-centered. Now, I didn't say student-centered. What I mean is student learning, student growth, not if the student wants it, that's what we do. I don't mean that. When I say student-centered, I don't mean that. The students are what we're about, right? But they don't get to determine what we do. So hopefully that makes that clear. Thirdly, I think effective faculty development is consistent in measuring teacher and student actions. As part of what we do, we want to measure what the teachers do. We know what it is, the actions that teachers do in the classroom that are effective, that lead to more learning, and the kinds of things that students do. Right? There's a long list of things. If you do these things, if your teachers do these things in the classroom, and they have students do these things, they will learn. And so as part of our training, we want to try to measure that. We're part of our ongoing growth and development. We have to be careful not just looking at the summative or standardized testing, right? It's kind of like an autopsy today? Okay, that was somebody else's joke and I borrowed it. Hopefully it was a good one. Kind of like an autopsy. So at the end of the year, you get the standardized testing and you see what the health of the patient was after they're dead. They're gone already. Now, I know you can use those numbers for next year. There's lots of good reasons for using standardized testing. But what works is besides that, we're really interested in measuring student actions as we go. Measuring student health and teacher health on an ongoing basis so we can keep them healthy and not have to just worry about doing the autopsy at the end. So, for example, I do frequent walkthroughs through the classroom, 10, 15, 20 minutes, maybe shorter walkthroughs frequently. And I'm looking for, on my form, I'm looking for things that we know lead to more and greater student learning. Things like the lesson planning that I see ahead of time is student learning focused, not just content focused. What will the student do with the learning? That there's modeling of strong and weak work. There's regular descriptive feedback, those kinds of things. So I'm looking for those kinds of teacher actions and student actions on an ongoing basis. So we're trying to measure that. Again, I've done charts, and we've looked at the numbers and statistical analysis, and that's been sort of helpful. But mainly it's having us understand as a group, as a faculty, what we're looking for. So related to that has been developing a common vocabulary or common understanding of good practice. We use terms like backward planning and learning targets and checking for understanding. And I know that those sometimes import problematic ideas with them, so you have to be careful what you use in your school. But we use those as a kind of shorthand. We're not buying the philosophy necessarily always. But we try to work in a common vocabulary, a common understanding in all our teachers. What is it that's good teaching practice? So that when we're talking together, we can say, are you checking for understanding? Are you using informed assessment? And people know what we mean. So you don't have to say, are you checking for how they're doing every time? You don't have to use a long phrase. You just use shorthand. So the walkthroughs are connected, for example, with that. It has those kinds of terms on it. And so we use this and try to give immediate feedback to teachers so they can use it. Part of the effectiveness of feedback is getting it quickly so they can act on it. I just started using Google Docs. I know I'm way, way behind the curve on that. I had to use a paper form, then I moved to something that's on my phone. Trying to type in the comments on your phone was just too cumbersome. So I'm using Google Docs, which allows me, of course, to share I fill out the form, I do the feedback for the teacher on Google Docs, share it with them immediately. They can look at it during their prep period if they want to, or after I leave the classroom. And we can go back and forth with comments and questions. And I think, I've just started doing it, but I think that's going to be very, very helpful. Because I would prefer, of course, to have 15, 20-minute observation, and then later the teacher comes in and we talk for half an hour about what I saw. But that's just impossible. There's not enough time in the day to do that. And I try to do 20 walkthroughs each quarter, which maybe some of you did many more than that. I would love to do more, but even 20 can sometimes be difficult. But using this form, using Google Docs, we're able to have a somewhat of an interactive conversation about what I saw. So they get feedback, they can immediately act on it and ask questions or make clarifications if they need to. Okay, fourthly, effective faculty development is focused on people and practices, not on programs. Implementation here is the key. Do teachers actually use what's been emphasized this past year? If you think back to the last couple of years in your faculty development plan, are they actually using it? Is it improving their classroom? Is it having an impact on student learning and student action? It's not just a program. And I don't know too many people that are tempted by that, but sometimes we buy into something and we're just going to do it regardless of, does it fit our people, our students, our context right now? And maybe it isn't a good fit. So just keep in mind, it's people, not programs. Right? Programs are great, but we want to focus on our people right now. So staying flexible is important. Being willing to shift the training as needed. This year, based on our discussions and our secondary teachers, I'm also the head of the secondary, and I lead those meetings. We began viewing the Paul Tripp DVD series, your Christian School of Culture of Grace. Some of you are probably on that video. I saw some faces I recognize. We've done some Tripp stuff a couple years ago, but it's been a while since we've done it. And I think maybe it's related to that predictability and supportiveness score. Okay, well, how can we be more gracious in our school? How can we bump that score up? This wasn't on the original plan, but as we discussed it over the last several months, we picked that up late this spring, and we'll continue that into next year. So staying flexible, it wasn't on the program initially, but the people at our point in time needed that. Fifthly, I think effective faculty development is committed to teacher buy-in. This is important. We need to make sure we make it useful in their classrooms. Teachers, as you know, teachers most resent, out of all the things they resent in your school, they most resent the loss of time. Right? It's always a time battle. And they're willing to give up time, but you better make sure whatever you're doing, whatever meetings you're doing, is not a waste of time. If there was only one point I could make here, it would be don't waste their time. Then we could all just leave. Don't waste their time. Make sure it's worthwhile. Useful doesn't have to be pragmatic. I don't mean that. Increased philosophical understanding is very, very useful in the long run. So I don't mean you have to apply it Monday morning, but they need to see the usefulness of it. Make sure it helps them to grow in understanding the mission, and they realize that they are understanding the mission better. This goes back to leaders being reminders. We're doing this because it will help you grow in understanding the mission. And very few teachers, at least I know in my school, aren't interested in understanding classical education better. I think they all want to know better. What is this all about? How do we do it? And so make sure that whatever we're doing is committed to that. We're not wasting their time. Make sure it helps them to grow professionally, and they see themselves growing professionally and each other. That's really important. They're in this community of teachers that are also all growing. And think about using teachers as leaders as well, as presenters or leading faculty development. I know some of you do that. At our curriculum day in January, for example, we had two of our leaders led a presentation on formative assessment strategies. Both one is an elementary teacher, one is a secondary teacher. And they're very, very good at weaving in formative assessments in their classrooms. So I asked them to do the presentation rather than just always being me. And it was great. They did a wonderful job, and other teachers who already respected these two teachers could see that they really were expert, and it created a conversation that was amongst the staff that maybe wouldn't have been there before. Two of our other teachers led us through introductions to a curriculum mapping program that we've adopted recently. And they actually, it was their idea. It actually wasn't me, the administrator, saying, okay, we're going to do a curriculum mapping now, and here it is. Do it. It was the two teachers that came to me and said, we think this would be great for all of us to know in a much easier way what everybody is doing about everything. And that's the idea, at least, behind curriculum mapping. And so they came to me and said, we want to do this. And I said, great. Could you please lead the presentation? And so they organized that. They got the, and they did the whole, all the background work, and got the program, led the presentation. And this spring led us all in implementing that as well. So getting teachers as part of the process, I think, can help with the teacher buy-in. Not that there's this teacher versus administrator antagonism. I don't mean that. I used to teach that was the case. I don't sense that in our schools. But it doesn't always have to be sort of top-down. It should be other teachers. Hopefully that doesn't mess anything up. Sorry about that. So tap in. Look at tapping into the expertise on your staff. You have them, use them. Sixthly, I think effective faculty development should be prioritized by the top administration. We need to show that it's a priority. through the allocation of limited resources. Right? That's what our job really is resource allocation. That's what the job description of the administrator. Because we have limited resources, time, money, energy. You can't put your whole heart into everything all the time. So we as leaders, we have to make sure that resources are allocated properly. And so we prioritize. We set priorities, and I think teachers need to see that this is a priority as well in the budget and in the time. I think it's important to make sure that all regular meetings have some significant time devoted to faculty growth, faculty development. All regular meetings. Now, sometimes there are emergency meetings. You just have to deal with an issue. But I think some significant time has to be devoted to faculty growth in every monthly meeting. Now, if things can be dealt with an email, do it that way. If you know, announcements, yeah, you have to do that sometimes. I don't know what significant means, and for you it's going to be different. Every school's different. For us, it's more than half the time. We have an hour and 15 minutes, you know, three times a week, and more than half of that is talking about some part of our faculty growth plan, more than half the time. I wish it were more. Teachers come in at 3:15 and they're pretty tired, and the last thing they want to do is start, you know, get philosophical in the discussion. But it doesn't take very long where they're energized again. That energizes them and makes them, because they really want to grow as teachers. They want to understand what we're doing better, and that's a much better situation. So think about that. Do all of your meetings have some significant time devoted to growth? Training should be clearly encouraged, even frequently led by the top administration. Shouldn't be something that teachers do, administrators are in the office. Right now, I know everybody's school structure is different, so not all the head administrators are also the academic people. And so I'm not saying that every head of school must lead all the faculty and all that. I'm not proposing that at all. But they should at least, I think, be there and be visibly supportive, and the teachers understand that this is not just the academic thing, then the business thing is over here. Right? The all administration supports what we're doing. And it would be good for administrators once in a while to lead as well, as we're able to do that. But for sure, it should be a priority and be seen as a priority. Okay. Effective faculty development is committed to encouraging teachers who are dedicated to personal and professional growth and learning. Encouraging teachers who are dedicated to growing. I think we need not be afraid to commit disproportionately to our best teachers. Don't be afraid to commit disproportionately to your best teachers. This was hard for me to get used to at first, coming again from my background where everything was equal, right? This department got something, this department wanted it, and everybody's fighting over getting the resources. I don't think you have to worry about that, but don't be afraid. Maybe don't advertise it, but if you have really, really excellent teachers, right, it's okay to send them on extra things or give them extra training. Maybe they take a class or they're getting extra books or whatever it happens to be. I think that's okay. Everyone has opportunities, but your really best teachers, they need more opportunities in some way to grow. They want that. They need it. They'll be willing to do more things. I think that's a good model for other teachers as well, because they see this teacher or this group of teachers really taking off on their own growth, prioritizing learning, and always getting better. And those who maybe need a little more encouragement to do that will see that and become, hopefully, more like them. So, it's not like it's a budget priority or a goal of mine to give more money to certain teachers, but I'm not afraid to do that if it comes up. I haven't sent anybody to Italy yet to work on their Latin. I know some schools have done that. And I know a teacher who would like to do that. Now, maybe that'll happen someday. I don't know. And then, of course, publicly reinforcing the professional growth through newsletters or just in your meetings, highlighting them. One of the things we do in our monthly meetings is discuss each teacher's personal professional plan. Not every teacher every time, but they will share what they're doing in their personal growth. The NFP, if you're familiar with the NFP, the ISN NFP setup, meaningful faculty evaluation. They have another name for it now, but it's just personal goal setting. And so we talk about those things in meetings as well. Unfortunately, I think we have to be prepared then to remove those who are not committed to ongoing growth. That's an unfortunate reality. If we have someone, we want to push those who are just getting along. We want to give opportunities for those who are really going. But if for those who just won't grow or can't for whatever reason, we have to be prepared to counsel them out of the profession, perhaps. They should be serving God somewhere else, right? This is not the place for them, apparently. And that may take a while. I'm not saying, you know, go home and cut the bottom 10% of your workforce. You know, I've heard that kind of thing. I'm not suggesting that at all. But the assumption is that none of us have arrived. No school here has arrived. None of you administrative teachers have finally got. I think there are probably very few actual classical schools in our midst. We call ourselves classical Christian schools. But if you look back at what classical schools were doing, you know, 300 years ago, we're a long way away from that, most of us. I can't speak for your school. My school, not really classical, although we use that term. We're closer than most other people, but we're not quite there. We certainly haven't arrived. So complacency is toxic, as you know. Complacency is toxic. And the people that are complacent, they think they've arrived, but they're just not able to do it. You have to counsel them out. So yes, we want to give, we want to commit and support those that are growing. And on the other hand, we might have to eventually ask someone else to find something else to do. And again, that's not a main point, but it is a reality. Eighth, we want to be committed to a sustained and consistent effective faculty development. Sustained and consistent. It takes patience. We want to provide opportunities for application and reflection, collaboration over time, and for the long haul. This is not going to happen. Most really good things in faculty growth are not going to happen very quickly. They take time. And so we have to be prepared. Again, that's sort of the flip side of what I just talked about. The teacher wasn't growing. Well, you know, we can be patient, but up to a point. So choose wisely and keep at it. Be patient. I did a recent survey of our teachers on our professional development plan. And the most common comment was their desire for more time to work together, to discuss and to collaborate. They just want more time to do that. And I'm not sure how to do it because they also want to teach all day and then they want to collaborate. And I know schools are doing things like they're doing every week to get an early release or having quarterly curriculum days, and those kinds of things are excellent. So we'll be looking at other ways we can build that into our already busy schedule, some compact school year, busy day. Is there also time to collaborate? How do we build that in? So we want to make sure we're doing this sustained and consistent, providing opportunities, and keeping in mind that it might take years of practice and reinforcement from you, the leaders, reminders, to make these ideas permanent in the faculty. When I first started really talking about student action objectives, student action-centered objectives for the student will be able to kinds of structure. It took a while to get some of our teachers over that to change their mindset. Because we tend to be, as teachers, activity-oriented or content-oriented. That my goal for the day is to do this thing with the French Revolution. But that's not really the goal. The goal is that the students would know the French Revolution better. And so it's shifting that thinking. Sometimes that takes time, and it takes patience. So repetition and reinforcement. Think about compound interest, right? Over time. Over time it builds and it grows. And so sticking with it, will grow and will pay. And I think connected with that is avoiding too much change or variety. Introduce and implement carefully to avoid fatigue or even cynicism. I don't suspect you have much cynicism in your school. Maybe you have some skepticism. I don't know about the new thing. Where I used to teach, there was plenty of cynicism. Because a new superintendent would come in, or a new principal would come in. They would have their new plan, right? It would last 3 years. He'd be gone. The new guy would come in. And the grizzled old veterans would just say, yeah, just wait, kid. 2 years, he'll be gone. It's on something else. And it was true. They were right. Just do what you do, and it'll blow over. And very, very cynical lot. I don't experience that, and I'm sure you don't either. But you can. We can wear people out with all the new ideas. You'll come to this conference and spend 3 days here, and you'll have a ton of new ideas, and you'll go back and you know, people say, he must have been to a conference. Look at all the new stuff, right? So we need to be careful. On that same survey, one teacher, it was only one, but one teacher did say, the least helpful part of our faculty development was we have too many balls in the air at once. too many things going on. I think it's a fair comment. Now, we had our accreditation visit last year, so there was that. They were very nervous. I was. They were nervous, of course, about that. And there's certification. Now we're accredited, or been accredited. Now we're required to do that. That ball's in there. And then I've got 7 strategies, and then I've got 4 new assessments. Now we're doing it. All right, so we've got too many balls in there, and that's my fault, and it's true. We get to drop the accreditation ball this year, so I think we're gonna be okay. But it's just something to be aware of. You can fatigue them. You can wear them, because they do, in fact, have to teach all day long. And then you've got your thing that you want them to do too. And find a way to weave that in seamlessly into what they're doing in the classroom. So it's not an extra thing. It supports what they're doing in the classroom, not adding to. We don't want to just pile on more stuff. Okay. I think we're doing fairly okay with the time. Lastly, we want to make sure our faculty development is concerned with developing an overall, what I call situational awareness, I think that's a military term, or self-consciousness, or mainly a professional judgment. The ultimate goal is their growth in professional judgment. We use a lot of scenarios and situations in our, particularly secondary discussion, we've done in elementary as well. The point of that is not that they'll know what to do when they face that situation. Right? They're never going to face that exact situation. But the point is, for us to step back, look at a situation, and diagnose before we start prescribing the solution. It's really easy for teachers to say, oh, there's a solution, I know how to fix it, man, away we go. Because you have to do that as teachers, you know, 100 times a day. Situation, read it, go. So we try to step back, spend some time, look at the scenario, talk about it for 35 minutes, diagnose all the possible things that might be going on before we start talking about a solution. That's just one way. Of trying, again, to reach that main point of growing their professional judgment so they don't need you as administrators. That would be the goal, right? You don't have to be in the classroom. Of course, that will never arrive. Teachers always need feedback. They always need administrators to care and talk with them, even if they're, you know, 100%, or they still want that. So you're always going to be necessary. But we want to try to move them more and more towards developing their own professional judgment so they can do those things or be leaders in the school as well. And that there's an example of that on the back of that packet too, if you want to take a look at that here in just a second. Not now. All right, quickly, some roadblocks or challenges to this. What is it that stands in our way? But I think probably number one challenge is time. Again, there's never enough time. You have all one of the things you want to do in the classroom, and you've got this time. So using time wisely. My worst teacher meeting moment didn't come as an administrator, thank goodness. It came as a teacher where I used to teach. The administrator had been gone, so we had we were 40 or 50 of us assembled in, I don't know, a Tuesday morning in the library or something, and he comes in with his stack of mail and starts opening his mail. Oh, that's junk mail. Oh, junk mail. Oh, I'll look at that one later. And so we did this for 15 minutes in our teacher meeting. Right? That's a waste of time. Most of us thought, that's kind of a waste of time. Why are we here? I could be grading papers. I could be playing. So don't do that. Don't open your mail in front of your teacher. Just from teacher perspective. Or things like that. Right? So finding time for collaboration with teachers' desire, peer observations, time to debrief, you know, building in these things in the school day or in the school week, that's a real challenge. Balancing time to grow with time to teach. It's never going to be enough. You know, I have a teacher that always wants to extend the school year every year. I just have 3 more weeks of the school year. I just have 3 more weeks. I could get more done. You know what? You don't use the time you have to maximize. 3 more weeks is not going to fix it because you'd always want 3 more weeks, right? Oh, 3 more weeks. Well, she's Canadian, so I don't know. Maybe that explains it. Hopefully she won't listen to this. We'll be okay. She's a great teacher, though. Awesome, awesome teacher. And that's the truth. I'm not joking. She's really, really good. Second challenge, that wasn't in the script. I should have left that out. Damn. Second challenge is a mission drift. Right? We explore contemporary methods and research, but we're always with a critical eye. I don't have time to go into detail this, but my rant on this a little bit, but the false promises of heavy student use of technology. Heavy student use technology, that will solve it. I think that's a false promise. They don't have anything to offer but more engagement we read it. And all it is engaging. And even then, it's maybe not. Maybe it's disengaging after all. Right? So I think we look at content, not against technology, and all right, so fine technology, but I think there are things like that where there are promises made or we're exploring contemporary things. We need to make sure that it's appropriate, that it fits our mission, and not be afraid to say, you know, that's not for us. We've got other things to do. We like the technology, the old technology. Printing press works great, right? And we're going to stick with that for a while. Anyway, so just being aware of inappropriate theory or practice, things that don't match what we're trying to do. Territorialism can be a challenge. Some teachers have their own approaches, or maybe you inherited a teacher or two that have their own thing that they do in the classroom, and they've been doing it really, really well for 17 years. And now you want them to do whatever it is that you think the whole faculty ought to do together and grow together. And they're just unwilling to do it because they have their thing. And that could be a challenge. Maybe they've stopped growing. Again, maybe they're cruising, they're coasting. There can't be any neutrality in this. You can't have one teacher that's kind of their own island. They're just going to do their own thing. Right, that's fine. I teach fourth grade the same way. I'm just going to do my own thing. Can't do that. Everybody has to buy into that. So that's a challenge that you may have to face. Along with that is disagreements, perhaps, on direction application. We have major conflicts over what we try to do in training, but sometimes some teachers take some convincing. It may take time, repetition, they see success from the teachers. Sometimes making that transition may take some time. So you have to decide, is this to somebody who's going to do their own thing, or they just need some convincing over time. So there can be a territorialism. Sometimes it's just that they need to see it working before they'll totally buy in. I mean, they're with you on this program Nostra thing. I think I'm with you there, but I need to see it working before I'll totally buy in. Budget, of course, is a challenge. Where do you find time or money in your budget to send people to conferences or bring speakers in or have them go get classes or read or all the things that you want to do? And it's just important, again, to prioritize that as an administrator, but let's make sure we're spending money on this. And that number is going to vary, of course, to your school, but it's a challenge. And finally, fatigue or faculty buy-in. Again, trying to do too many things or being inconsistent, swinging that pendulum back up, like in my previous experience with a pendulum, with every new superintendent, the pendulum is swinging. And so we want to be careful of that. Beware of fatigue. We want to push or lead or however you want to describe it constantly to grow, but we don't want to do too many things. So that's a careful balance. Okay, the last thing then, I think on my time, what are we, 11:55, right? Okay, the last bit here is our actual track development plan. So I have an outline there. It's the same thing that you have on your handout. And I'll just talk through this really briefly because you can see in the outline, you can see in here what it is we actually do. This is just our actual example from Veritas. And I developed this to give the teachers this so they could see, because we have a number of balls, as you can see, in the air. I want them to be able to see it graphically, have a picture of it. These are things we did this last year for our faculty growth, faculty development. We really have three main areas. We have a group area, which is over here on the side. We have individual plans as well. So group plan, individual plan. And then there's this personal plan, which can be all kinds of different things. And that really is going to depend on the teacher. But the group are the things we're doing together. For example, we're reading the Quintilian. We did a lot of work on accreditation, the seven strategies review, did checking for understanding and curriculum day. So you can see the particulars there. And then the individual plans are mainly made up of things from their NFP, which is their two personal goals that they set every year. And anything that comes from the regular check-in, and of course from walkthroughs as well. As I'm doing walkthroughs, I'll get feedback, and there may be some things that come up that I'll want them to focus on. I probably should have mentioned that we do mostly walkthroughs. I do occasionally do a full period observation, but that's usually only for newer teachers or those if there's some particular thing we're focusing on, where we'll sit down and think, okay, what am I going to see? And I'll go see the whole class, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the whole thing. So we do that, but only in certain cases. almost all of the other observations that I'm doing is based on their plans, their particular goals, their individual plan, but also our school plan. And I'm doing mostly these shorter walkthroughs and giving, you know, we're meeting informally, talking in the office and things like that. And of course, we're getting feedback that way. Okay, I think we have a few minutes left. Are there questions or comments, suggestions? Maybe I should just really quickly talk to what the rest of these things are, shouldn't I? So there's the full group plan. I also did this for individuals if they wanted to use that as a way to sort of track things that they're going to be doing during the year. So that's something teachers would keep. The third page is the observation form that I use for walkthroughs. And so you can see that, and then the back page is actually an example of one of the critical incidents that we discussed with our secondary teachers. It has a real-life scenario from our school this last year. And then there's some of the questions that we ask. So again, we would spend 30-35 minutes going through these diagnostic kinds of questions. And I've written in some of the, in the italics there, are some of the actual teacher responses and the brief. I was taking notes during our discussion so you can see kind of the way teachers are thinking. So we spent 30-35 minutes discussing that critical incident, and then before we get to, you know, trying to prescribe what exactly we're going to do to fix it. Okay, so questions or comments? Yes, ma'am, in the back. I came up with this. I worked with our head of lower school, and we worked together on shaping this each year. Don't have board input. Teacher input, more and more, I think teacher input would be great. I need to do more of that. This is usually something I develop and then say, okay, here's what we're doing. But it really should be more teacher involvement. Yes, ma'am.
Are your walkthroughs
announced? No, it's unannounced. And I think, you know, some people are nervous about that But by September, October, they get used to you. Kids mostly get used to you being there, and you just hear us in and out. I know some schools used to have a class where everybody would stand up. You know, the kids would all say, good morning, Mr. Lynch. I said, don't do that. I just want to come in, see what's going on, slip out, and not have to do that. So they're totally unannounced and frequent. Okay, yes, sir?
Per teacher, how many walkthroughs?
Well, it's really good to say, I try to do 20 a quarter. I try to spread it around relatively evenly. If there are certain teachers I need to see more of, or certain classes, say seventh graders, you don't want to see them everywhere, so I'll do that. So I think it's sort of, I have a target number, and then I'm going to individualize it based on what the needs are, just, you know, this week maybe even. Right? Yes? The critical days is a day in January where we take the full day and we spend the morning doing training of some kind, or faculty growth training. Training usually, you know, means pre-service kind of teacher, but faculty growth of some kind. The afternoon is typically other meetings or small group meetings, and we'll just take a day off. So it's a Monday day off for us. Yes. Yes. Per quarter. 20 for the whole fact. 20. I just do 20. Total. Yes. Thank you. I should do that. Yeah, no way. And 20, honestly, 20, I didn't make every quarter this year. I didn't get 20 every quarter. I should do more. Administrators need to spend more time in the classroom, but, you know, we have time constraints as well. Yes, sir.
Are there any really great texts on faculty development?
Great texts on faculty development. I probably... I'm sure there are. There are lots of, actually, a lot of things like the ASCD, Association of School Curriculum Directors, ASCD has some great stuff. Again, you know, it's a contemporary, mostly public school organization. I get their publications and their emails and things, and about 85% of that, you know, just discard. But they are a good source for some things. Yes.
Our school seemed like we did a lot of our training, kind of like home
Right.
Have you seen a difference in effectiveness with like bringing an outside curriculum and pulling it together versus you or your master teachers coming in and doing a training for the entire group and then 50-50?
That's a great question. Maybe some other people have a better answer. We've done both, and some have been really good. We've had mostly video. We're not able really to fly in speakers. We've done video work. Most of it has been internal, has been me or other teachers doing it. Other experiences with that, just having outside more effective than inside, anybody? Yes.
Can you establish some kind of like due process for complaints against teachers, whether the parents or because one of the things I've had seems like a lot of times parents jump to the headmaster or
Application
is never enforced. I just don't know. Well,
we do have a grievance policy. Like any schools have grievance policy or appeal process. So we have a written policy that teachers as well are supposed to follow. Go to the teacher first. If that doesn't work, then you can come to the head. And mostly that works. Yeah. So I think that's important. It's not necessarily part of this, but it's important to have so teachers get that contact.
Because I'll be honest, I've worked in three different and none of them had it. Even the one I'm at right now doesn't really have a formal code like that.
So right. Well, we bought our policies from Logos School way back when, and it was in there, and it's a blessing. It's been a tremendous blessing. Yeah, we've tweaked it, of course, over the years, but yeah. One more question. I think I need
Ray. Would it be easier for writing the goals, get goals?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, good. So the first thing they do is they go through what we call our characteristics of teaching excellence. They do a self-assessment. They have these 16 traits of a good teacher, and they go through that. And then they pick out a couple areas. Well, it could be very strong. I tell you, it doesn't have to be a weakness. You could be building on your strengths. In fact, that's very often more effective. So they're set their goals based on their self-assessment. And then we sit down and we meet. And sometimes I write the goals for them. Not very often. Once in a while, I meet with the teacher. Here are my goals for you for this year. I've done that. Typically, though, it's their goal. Or we'll meet together. They'll come and say, I've got one, but I'm not sure about the second one. So we'll talk together. So it really depends on the teacher and where they are in their own, as teachers, their own growth. And then they'll write up the plan. We'll sign off. And then we meet frequently to talk about it. Some of it can be as simple as complete the certification process this year. Sometimes it can be an action research project. So it really is going to depend. Yeah, it's going to vary. If any of you would like to talk more about this, or ask questions, or give me feedback, comments, you know, corrections, I'd be open to that as well. Love to talk about what you are doing. So I think we're out of time. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.